Welcome to the Fucking Rad Snowboarding Podcast. I'm Shred Jesus, and this is our first season.
But when you're dealing with business, you're dealing with a lot of horseshit.
they were kind of like almost trying too hard to be wild and crazy.
I remember standing at the top of the pipe with Bert Lamar in 86.
It's Sherman Poppin returning your call.
That's the inventor of the Snurf board.
It's 4:30 where I am, but if you get this, while we're still up and not going to bed, give me a call. Hello?
Welcome to episode 1. We're starting right at the beginning, before snowboarding was influenced by skateboarding and surfing.
Yeah, 1965.
Sherman bolts together a couple of skis and takes his daughters out to Snurf, a term his wife made up.
So I saw it as a children's toy, really, something to play in the backyard and replace the sled, because every year a few people died on sleds by running into trees head first. This way they could stand up, jump off, and jump back on and save their head.
Sherman's working for an industrial supply company and designing Snurf boards on the side. He licenses the Snurf board designs to the Brunswick Corporation, who markets snurfing to kids and sells over 1 million boards in the late 60s and early 70s. You can tell he's proud of his invention.
Snurfer turning into the snowboard became a lifesaver for ski areas.
His hometown of Muskegon put up a sculpture to honor his invention.
That's quite a sculpture now because it's covered in snow.
The sculpture has a snowboarder at the bottom, and high up on top, Sherman's daughter rides a snurfer.
She's the one on the top of the sculpture. She was the first downhill champion for the midget group.
Sherman helped run an annual snow surfing contest, which was co-hosted by the local college of Muskegon.
In 1979, Jake came to one of our slalom downhill competitions.
Yep, he's talking about Jake Burton Carpenter, the guy who would start the most dominant snowboard company in the world.
He'd been given a snurfer for his 14th birthday by his father. Well, at that time, I had no idea who he was. But he hadn't gotten into production or anything. He was just dreaming about it, and he had this wonderful dream that there's more to this fun I'm having than just riding on the snow. He saw a future that, frankly, I dreamed about but didn't think it was possible.
Sherman's kids grew up. Snurfing faded into obscurity with the rise of snowboarding, and the Poppins moved to Colorado. Surprisingly, Sherman waited nearly 15 years after meeting Jake to try a snowboard.
Yeah, I didn't start even riding till I was 65 years old. I was a hot dog skier and got involved in snowboarding because my wife was into it and she talked me into it and I started doing it. I had a used one that was like a 2x4, actually. What really happened, which really got me going, Transworld magazine had a business convention every year. I was the keynote speaker at the dinner meeting, and I came out to lodge the next morning with 500 snowboarders, and I came out with a pair of skis over my shoulder, and I got roundly by the following season. I was riding my usual 80 to 100 days a year. I had made friends with some of the guys from Burton, and this was in Steamboat Springs. They were having a big sales meeting there with tents and equipment, and the sales manager gave me one of their new boards to ride, and all of a sudden I knew my problems with snowboarding were over with. It was so fantastic.
And now it's been about 10 years since Sherman's been on a board.
In a few days, I'll be 85. But I did have a lot of fun riding with my son-in-law, and we had three generations riding together. Just a minute, Louise, where did we snowboard in Canada? Revelstoke? Yeah, we went to spend a week in Revelstoke riding your mountains in that area. That was fun. I had to quit riding because my wife and I both developed medical issues. And you don't live in a mountain ski resort if you can't use the snow, so we bailed out and came down to the warmer climates of Georgia. Well, thanks for your interest. Bye-bye.
Burton started making boards in 1977 and was generally considered to be the company that took snowboarding out of the back hills and into the resorts. By the late 80s, Burton and a handful of rider-driven brands like Sims, Barfoot, Ganue, and Avalanche kept us looking to the future with innovative improvements to boards, boots, bindings, and gear every new season. The stuff that happened in the 70s went widely unrecognized as we all got addicted to the chairlift and the excitement of competitions, magazines, and video parts. But before we can go there with the podcast, we had to make one more stop to recognize a guy whose name just kept coming up.
I'll tell you who was the godfather of fucking snowboarding beyond any of us, was Dmitry Milovich with Winterstick.
Dmitry started Winterstick in 1972, and to appreciate just how far ahead of the curve he was, you really have to look at the boards he was making next to the boards from other companies at that time. Which I was lucky enough to do at a recent showcase of snowboard photographer and vintage snowboard collector Scott Surface's boards at the Endeavor headquarters here in Vancouver, BC.
I don't think anyone's collecting them to make money.
Yeah.
I don't think. I kind of do it more to try to create a, I don't know, like almost a visual timeline. And then basically to be able to look at what people were thinking and what parts of the world they were thinking, what their ideas were.
Dmitry was making full-on powder swallowtails riding fully surf style in Utah in 1972. I saw pictures of him that would be classic today. You know, just laying out a big, beautiful bottom turn with a backpack on and just surfing, you know.
Transworld did induct Dmitry into the Snowboarding Hall of Fame, but over the years he's distanced himself from the snowboard industry and stopped giving interviews. I really wanted to include him in this podcast, so I searched for someone with contact info for him. It wasn't looking good, but I didn't give up.
Anyway, I was traveling, but I did get your message.
Dmitry was kind enough to answer my call. He's the CEO of an engineering company in Utah. At first, his inquisitive politeness seemed promising.
Where do you go usually, Whistler? So, who are you doing this for? Is it a... Okay.
But he cut to the chase right away.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, as in I understand what they say. Eric, I really don't give interviews, and I, you know, stopped decades ago, so... sorry to disappoint you. It's interesting what you're doing. Where are you located? Vancouver.
Yeah.
Cool.
I wanted to respect his privacy, but I couldn't help myself. I was talking to a guy who was shredding POW before resort acceptance, proper bindings or boots, and high fives.
Yes, the answer is yes. We're bilingual, both ski and snowboard. So it just depends on what's going on any particular days. The deep days, I'm on a board. Yeah, it usually is. We didn't have a great year last year, but most of the time it's really good. So, yeah, you better come down again. You know, I've been snowboarding for 40 years, which makes me about as good as the average 10-year-old in Brighton. It's true.
I had so many questions, and I was super stoked that he took a genuine interest in my project.
When you say old pro snowboarders, you mean people who competed or people who ran companies in the early days, or who do you mean? Yeah, there's a lot of crossover too, I think, but I don't know. I'm sorry, I won't be able to help you out. I'm able, but I just don't do it. But you know what else might be interesting if you're looking for subjects in snowboarding would be to maybe contact some of the current specialty manufacturers, like. I don't know the industry at all, but, you know, people like Pryor or Jones or somebody like that. And talk to the top designers and try to find out what turns them on. What do they really enjoy? And that might be a lot more interesting than talking to a bunch of old guys about snowboarding. But okay, well, good luck with it. And as I said, if you can find some of the designers, you know, I mean, you're gonna talk to some interesting people. If you can get them off the topic of, you know, trying to sell their boards. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just if you can try to get back to how, you know, what turns them on. I mean, I was at in Calgary, I don't know, like 15 years ago, I got an award at Transworld. And we were standing around, and I was standing around with Regis Rowan. Do you know that name? Yeah, tell Regis hello, he's cool. Anyway, we were standing around, and somebody was talking and saying, you know, how deep can you snowboard? Or they were saying, you know, when it gets really deep, it just isn't any fun. And I think Regis and I, in the same breath, said it's never too deep. And you know, but if you watch people ride and you talk to different people, you'll find a lot of opinions about that. And it'd be interesting for you to talk to some of the designers. Again, I'm thinking of Pryor, because Pryor's up in your neck of the woods, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, yeah, people like that and others, Mike Olson, and say, what do you guys think? It's like the question Milovich would like to know the answer to. Is it ever too deep? Well, you'd be surprised. You know, a lot of people don't like it when it's really deep. But Regis said, and I said, it's never too deep. So, no, in Utah, I mean, it gets plenty deep here. It's overhead here, you know. We didn't have a good season, but I know you guys had a miserable season. Anyway, good luck with your podcast, all right? It's fun talking. Take care, Eric. Bye-bye.
Milovich was right. We've gotten to talk with some interesting people for sure. And we'd love to hear from you. Send us a message, drop us a comment, or leave a review. Why don't you answer Dimitri's question?
Is it ever too deep?
Music in this episode by NoFX, Los Secos, who's a Peruvian punk band from the 1960s, Captain Beefheart, and this is Russ Winfield and Mikey LeBlanc playing Under Me. I want to thank Sherman and Dimitri, as well as Chuck Barfoot and Scott Surface, who you also heard in there. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, I'll put your name in a draw for some swag. I don't know, say something from Dakine, or maybe the Boardroom Snowboard Shop up here in Vancouver. Special thanks to all the riders and designers and industry people who've taken time out of their hectic schedules to talk to us. And thank you for listening to the end. Come back next week for more fucking rad snowboarding podcast. We'll be interviewing the legendary Sean Farmer on the chairlift at Mount Baker.